Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast, a very special edition as the U.S. national team tryouts get underway today, Monday, July 10th at the new U.S. lacrosse headquarters in Sparks, Maryland. We are talking to two of the most distinguished members and midfielders of all time involved in the U.S. national team program, Matt Strebel and Kyle Harrison. Matt Strebel was a member of Team USA in 2002, 6, and 10. Kyle, a member of the U.S. national team in 2006 and 2014. Fellas, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here, Terry. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us. Fired up.
So I want to start by talking about what the experience means, particularly this tryout process, understanding that it changes based on the year and the coaching staff and the development of U.S. lacrosse, but understanding that with the experience that we have on this call, there's very few folks that can speak to exactly what it entails and what it means. So, you know, Matt, we'll start with you just because you got going a little bit earlier, being a part of that process in 2012 when the team was composed of college players and pros were not a part of the selection process. You know, having been a part of four different tryouts, how do you characterize the arc of emotion that you experienced leading up to the beginning of the event?
You know, it's funny, in thinking about the sort of the U.S. team tryout experience, the best thing I can equate it to was my experience of going to the 205 camp when I was a junior in high school that summer. And it was so when I went and tried out for the 205 or went to the 205 camp when I was a junior in high school, it was an experience where lacrosse was more of a secondary activity for me, given that I was a soccer player. And so I went in feeling like I had nothing to lose. And in 2001, when I went to that first tryout, coming off a national championship at Princeton, it was sort of the same vibe for me. I went in and there were so many great players. I was like, hey, there's no chance I'm making this team. I'm just going to, you know, have fun for the next 5 days. Back then, it felt like, I don't even know, I can't even remember how long it was. It was at the University of Delaware, and I roomed with Mike Springer, and it seemed like it lasted for an entire week, and you just played tons and tons of lacrosse. But as you go through it, I think you start to become more aware of the pressure. And, you know, and I think, you know, for someone like Kyle coming, Kyle was such, I remember, you know, when we tried out for that team in I guess it was 06, one of the things that's really great about the whole U.S. team tryout process is, as somebody who's playing professionally or is out of college, you watch, you know, I was watching someone I coached against, Kyle, when I coached at Princeton. And so to finally get a chance to see him play, he was coming out such a highly touted player. And so I remember that tryout being like, hey, there's Kyle Harrison. Let's see what he can do. And being so impressed by who he was coming right out of college. So that, to me, you know, I think for Kyle, and Kyle, you could speak to this, the experience was probably, you probably felt more pressure in 06 because you probably came out thinking you were going to make that team.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. I 06 was interesting. It was, you know, to speak to what, you know, Matt just said for starters, it was the same kind of thing, a little bit in that coming out, I wasn't really sure what to expect in terms of, I never played with caliber players like that. You know, we played my freshman year, I want to say, we played in that Lacrosse for Leukemia at McDonough. Our first game was against Team USA when I was at Hopkins. And I remember very vividly, I don't know why I was anywhere near Kyle Sweeney, but I picked up a ground ball and he like took the ball from me, took my stick from me. It was an absolute mess. And that was my first run-in with anybody on the national team. So, you know, you fast forward 3.5 years, to trying out in the end of 2005 for that 2006 team. You know, I did, as Matt said, there was a lot of pressure only based on the fact that, like, I was coming off of, you know, we had just won a national championship. I had won the Towarton. I think at the time I had just gone number one in the MLL draft. So just mentally, for me, it was one of the first times that I felt, like, significant pressure to perform. And I think back then, I know the structure's changed, and Matt can speak to it more than I can in terms of how the tryout process has shifted over the years. But back then, you know, Desco was running the show, and it literally, you know, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was just like 3 days of just scrimmaging. And so, yeah. You know, as each day passed, I got a little more comfortable, you know, being able to be on the same field with guys like Matt and Casey Powell and guys I'd looked up to for so long. But the pressure was certainly there.
And so let's just hone in on that 06 tryout process, because obviously, you know, with Coach Desko taking over and having a very unique style, I think that was going to be a little bit of a lesson learned, meaning that, you know, now it is the coach who controls the process. And that's something that, you know, advancing forward through Mike Pressler and Richie Mead and now John Donowski, we've seen that continue, you know, a balance between U.S. Lacrosse and the coach in terms of how they want to conduct the evaluation and make the team selection. But the other thing that was unique about 2006 was it was the first tryout that incorporated Major League Lacrosse players. And so, you know, obviously, Kyle and Matt, you were coming at it from opposite perspectives, given, you know, we've already established what the kind of tone setting was. But what was what are some other distinct memories about maybe the end of that tryout process and the feeling of whether or not you were going to make the team for both of you, given that ultimately you ended up both making the team?
You know, yeah, I think okay. For me, Kyle, go ahead.
Again, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm showing my age here, I can't remember it specifically, but I want to say that tryout ended, and then like a week later, the team came out. And so, does that sound right, Matt, or no?
You're talking about being old, Kyle. You need to stop that, because if you can't remember that, there's no chance that I'm going to be able to remember it. I do think that's right, though. I remember that week being a strange sort of like, I feel like I played well, I think I probably made it, but I'm not totally sure, and this is sort of agonizing waiting.
Yes. Okay, cool. We're on the same page. Yeah, that's what I remember. I remember the tryout happening, and then, you know, headed back to the MLL, my first summer in the MLL, so just trying to focus on that, and the team came out a week later. I think, you know, in retrospect, what I would have loved, especially with that group, I mean, for a midfielder, I mean, I was on a team with Matt Strebel, Roy Colsey, A.J. Hogan, J.J. Albert. I mean, I'm on the team with the best six midfielders, arguably, of all time. And so if I would have had more opportunity to play throughout the year with them, continue to learn from them, continue to grow as a group, I think it would have gone a long way, just because at that point, again, it was literally tryout, announced team, and then I want to say we had like a 3-day training camp right before the Worlds up in Syracuse, and then we just took off and went and tried to put it together. So obviously the process over the past decade has changed, and there's been more training camps and, you know, training team that tries to stay together throughout the year, which I think is certainly helpful. But back then, I would have loved that, because the midfielders I had the opportunity to be around for that short time, I learned so much. So I can't imagine how much more I would have learned if I would have had, you know, a couple months with those guys.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with that. And that, you know, I think that 06 team, given just like the level of talent that was on that team, and if you look at that on paper, it's kind of who's who of lacrosse over, you know, a 20-year window between, you know, whenever in the 80s and whenever in the 2000s. And there was so much that was learned after 06 in terms of how to put a team together and how to keep a team together so that you do have that time to develop familiarity. Because, you know, I just remember, I mean, by the end, you know, Kyle, you and I were running with Jalbert, and it was like, I'd never been on a field where there were three guys that were just flying around at the same speed. And like, it was so dynamic and so much fun, but it felt like by the time we got to the end of the World Games, it was like, oh man, we're just scratching the surface on what we could potentially do together.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, I want to follow up on that point, because I think 2006, you know, at that point it had been 30 years since the U.S. had lost a national team game, and the reputation that it was more difficult or more onerous or a bigger honor to make the U.S. team than it was to actually win the gold medal was at an all-time high. So, Kyle, how do you speak to that idea that, you know, the satisfaction of learning that you had made the team and parlaying that into how difficult it was to transition to the next challenge, which is now we have to go out and win and beat Canada on their home soil?
Oof, yeah, I mean, look, no one wants to lose, right? So and especially when you have USA on your chest. So I think that loss in 2006 has made a huge impact on just me and how I've approached the world since. You know, it's the reason I kept trying out, and the reason I wanted to go back and have another opportunity to win the gold, because we lost that game. I think, you know, obviously the honor of making the team and being a part of the process and getting to be one of the 23 guys that gets to represent the country in the World Games is, you know, arguably the biggest honor you can have in the sport. And I think it's something I'll always be proud of. But to have the thought that just making the team is enough and, you know, the winning and the World Games are the afterthought, I just don't subscribe to that.
Matt, did you ever get a
say? Yeah, and I think, it's funny. I 06 seems so long ago, but going back, the memories of it are really so fresh. And, like, that loss, you know, that was such a strange experience because we were such an incredibly talented team top to bottom. And it was one of those situations where, you hear this often when you talk about all-star teams or what are the limitations or the obstacles that a quote-unquote all-star team is going to face. And I think for us, it was a function of who's going to play what role. You know, it's like every guy on that team was used to being the top cover defenseman, the top midfielder, the top attackman. And so we were, I don't think there was a sense after the tryouts of like, oh, I made it. Now my job is done. It was, we made it and we understood because I think there was a sense of we're playing a good Canada team. There's a responsibility to our country and to U.S. lacrosse fans that we have to win. So I know that I certainly felt the pressure of winning, especially coming off of 2002 and having had that experience before. But it's so strange. And back then we were sort of thrown together and we didn't have that practice time. So it was hard to decide who was going to be, we started out that tournament, and Kyle, you may remember this. We basically had just like a summer league team lineup of middies where we would just go through it. And then by the end, I think we had, a players only team meeting where we sat down and we're like, hey, we need to have some organization around who's going to be our first line midfield group, who's going to be our second, et cetera, et cetera. And we created, we sort of built that organization from within. But early on, there were a lot of guys, I think, who were sort of feeling their way around teammates and guys they respected and trying to figure out how they fit together.
So transitioning the conversation to a little bit about 2010, it was, I was not a part of the Inside Lacrosse group at that point, and in 2010 I was. I didn't attend tryouts, but I do remember hearing kind of like the reputation of what Mike Pressler put together in Bryant and the intensity and the grind and the expectations that were put on the players being like almost analogized to that legendary 92 Dream Team basketball scrimmage in Monte Carlo, where I remember hearing things like the games that were going on at Bryant in the summer of 2009 were some of the best lacrosse I'd ever been a part of. Kyle, I'm interested in your memories of that and kind of how that kind of holds up to truth and fruition.
Man, those were fun. Those were incredible. I think for me, I was bummed that whole tryout process because I had just torn my hamstring. And so I had missed, I want to say all but two MLL games. And I was trying to work myself back in to being able to play at a high level. And I certainly wasn't where I needed to be in terms of being a world team player. But, what was happening at Bryant, man, the intensity, the level of play on the field. I mean, I can distinctly remember Matt running by a bunch of people scoring on the run from deep. And then, Paul was just coming along at that point. So, there was some very, very high level lacrosse being played in that tryout.
Matt, do you feel like that was kind of the peak of your kind of athletic performance because you were coming off those barrage teams?
Yeah, and I think the other thing about the tone that was set, I mean, you have to put it in the context of us having lost 4 years earlier. And so I think, to U.S. lacrosse's credit, there was a lot of soul searching that went on after 06 in terms of how can we make this a better process? And speaking to what Kyle mentioned earlier, it was, right away we had that, 40 or 50 guy training team where we did, the multiple after, we did the sort of bring in 150 guys, kill each other for 3 days. And then from that group, they took 50 guys and those 50 guys played four or five, I don't remember how many dates, but it was at least 3 dates later that fall. So it was a much longer process. It was, you just felt the whole way through sort of the shadow of 06 and that loss. So it's funny. My memory of it is less that like, this is fun, and more like this is suddenly work again. Like, I think that was the first time since I'd been at Princeton where I really felt like, oh wow, this is like, I'm coming to work every day. This is not necessarily something that I'm doing for fun. This is something that I'm doing because it's a job in a good way, though. You know, it was like, it's like a weird blend where there's an aspect, you know, where it would only be fun in the end, looking back, if we won.
Right.
And how much of that is attributable to Mike Pressler, who in his own right was in an interesting stage of his career, you know, 3 years removed from the Duke lacrosse scandal and now settled at Bryant, but also, you know, having had, oh, I would almost call it like a weird reputation for his like style and approach to the game, where I think he was considered to be a very demanding coach, but the teams that played on the field, like the end of those, you know, that Duke tenure, and Kyle, obviously you know, had one of your pinnacle moments of your lacrosse careers beating that 05 Duke team that, you know, had attracted so much attention for its like run and gun style, the way that long stick middies were carrying the ball into the box, the finishing and all the goal scoring and everything else. So, you know, I'm curious, and Kyle, maybe you can go first, just what it was like realizing, you know, the imprint that Mike Pressler put on that tryout process.
Well, I'll tell you, man, again, not sound like a broken record. I was bummed because I knew I wasn't, you know, where I needed to be. I was going to go out and compete, and I was going to go out and try and make plays and make things happen. But health-wise, you know, coming off a torn hamstring, I wasn't able to do it. But as far as the culture and the just the mood of that trial, I mean, it was right up my alley. It was like being back, you know, as Matt said, in college and scrapping and scrimmaging and then, you know, sixes, full field. Like, it was exactly like a college practice. And for me, that's, you know, that's where I thrived back at Hopkins. I loved the structure. I loved the intensity. And I loved understanding the expectation. I think through the tryout process, just to rewind back to 2006, like, I think part of my, the pressure, anxiety, nervousness I felt, and Matt, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I didn't know what they were looking for, right? Like, we were literally just scrimmaging. And so no coaches on the sideline, no one telling you what to do. It was like, just go out there. And so, you know, me being one of the younger guys at that point, you know, I didn't know what to do. I wasn't an MLL player. I hadn't played club. I didn't know anything. So I didn't know what I should be doing on the field to impress these coaches. And so you fast forward to that 2009 tryout. What I enjoyed about it, I mean, it was, you knew exactly what they were looking for, and you knew exactly the amount of effort, energy, and emotion that needed to go in to that tryout in order to have a spot on that team. So, you know, like I said, I was bummed that I wasn't healthy enough to do what I needed to do, but at the same time, the atmosphere that was created, that was right up my alley.
So then fast forwarding to post-MLL season 2013, I believe it was Labor Day weekend, you know, at Goucher, Richie Mead is the head coach, you know, coming off of his transition from ending his tenure at Navy to getting started at Furman, you know, kind of a similar type of you know, career transition that Mike Pressler had gone through 4 years prior. You know, Matt, I'm interested in what your, you know, kind of mental process was, you know, going for it a fourth time and also realizing, you know, and I remember talking to you about this at the time, that you weren't sure exactly how much, you know, how much you had left in terms of your career as a player and what you wanted to do and go through that experience. So how did you approach, you know, the goal of that tryout?
Yeah, you know, I was really on the fence about trying out to begin with. And, you know, I talked with Ryan Boyle about it a lot, and we'd been on, you know, the three previous teams together, and he made, you know, a personal decision to say, hey, I'm not going to try out. I don't think, you know, this is something that I'm, you know, have the mental space to take on at this time. And, you know, I still felt, for me, I still felt like I could play. And, you know, it was funny going into that final go round. It was, you know, I realized that there was an aspect of what I was trying to do in terms of making a fourth team that was kind of unusual. And that was kind of appealing to me. You know, it was sort of a last challenge where, you know, I've been fortunate to have a pretty successful career as a lacrosse player. And I thought, hey, you know, why not take a shot at this? Cause you know, my thought process as an athlete has always been, I'd much rather, you know, be 80 years old and sitting there and say, oh man, I wish I'd made that team, rather than, oh man, I wish I'd tried out. You know, it's that old, adage of you'd rather try something and fail than not try at all. And so, you know, it was going into that process, I've been in my career, I've played against the Gates, and I've played, with the guys who are playing now. I've bridged like all these different generations. And I think for me, that was sort of, hey, let me see if I can close it out with one more shot at this and sort of, put a stamp on things. And, it was that few days at Goucher, like I had a ton of fun playing, and it was, some of the best lacrosse that I played in that late stage of my career. So I was proud of that, and I was glad that I went out and did it. And it's funny. I just came off a trilogy camp at Goucher, and every time I walk out there, I sort of on those fields have memories of plays and things that I did on those fields. And I'm glad I tried out. As Kyle said, you wish you could make those teams. I wish I'd made that team in 14. I gave it everything I had, but anytime you get invited to try out for something like that, it's really hard to turn it down just as a competitor and as an athlete.
And Kyle, I'm interested in the same similar question to you. I mean, given that you were kind of coming off of your experience in LXM, had not yet rejoined MLL, if memory serves correctly, but were healthy, obviously there was probably a very acute, mental focus heading into those tryouts.
Yeah, man, I was very focused on those tryouts for a number of reasons. Mostly being healthy and knowing, kind of as Matt alluded to, like obviously we all have a ticking clock in our head. We have an understanding of our mortality as an athlete, and knowing that like I'm closer to the end than the beginning. I knew that was potentially probably my last opportunity to give it a real run at the U.S. team. So coming off LXM, not really making it back to the MLL just yet, because I think this was in the fall, if I remember correctly, this tryout. I was just locked in, man. It was exciting for me, and I think I had some success. I think I tweaked something. I can't remember what, but I had some success early in that tryout because I had been out of the MLL for, I want to say 4 years at the time. And so a lot of the people I was playing against, I had never played against before, And so I think being that the MLL is as small as it is, I think we play against each other so much that you kind of get used to folks' tendencies. You kind of know what they're going to do. They know what your counter move is going to be and whatever. And so it becomes a chess match. But for me, coming back from LXM into that tryout, all the guys I was dodging against or going against were guys that I had never played before. So for me, I was really excited and I was ready to go.
So two philosophical questions, and Matt, I'll start with you on this one. And it's the idea of trying out for a role. And so it's, as opposed to being one of, quote, the best six midfielders, at the end of your career, you're a veteran. At the beginning of your career, you're probably going to try to fit in as an energy guy. Depending on your style of play, if you're a midfielder, you might be, the dodger who's trying to initiate offense, or you could be a guy who's trying to finish plays, whether that's the second pass or the third pass or the step down shot or whatever else. Do you have the luxury of trying to be one of those guys in a tryout process, or is it so intense, so competitive, and so high level that it really just comes down to make as many plays as you can, do the right thing, and let the chips fall where they may?
I think, answering that question, the only way I can answer that question is it depends who you are, and that's one of the fortunate and unfortunate things about trying out for a team like this, and given the fact that you have some guys out there who are established, successful veterans, high, all pro players, and then you have guys who are scraping and clawing and just trying to make it. So, and I think as Kyle and I are some of the very fortunate guys who've been on multiple teams, and we've both had long, successful careers where, In 2002, I was like, I'm going to make this as a guy who can just run around like crazy, play midfield, play attack, invert, do whatever they need me to do. By the time I was trying out in 2010 and 2014, I was an established player with a pedigree and a reputation. And so you can afford to sort of, make the plays that you have to make and prove that, you're a guy who should be on this team, but you don't have to make every single play all the time. And then, there are those guys that stand out. Like, I remember Kyle, you may remember this. I remember in 2006, Steven Berger came out of nowhere at that tryout in 06 and was just lighting people up. And it was, you know, the question sort of all week long as we were just going out and scrimmaging was like, who's this? Who's that? Who's that? And that's one of the great things about that, as I was talking earlier about getting to see those college guys that you haven't played before. And, you know, Kyle mentioned coming back from LXM and all the MLL guys being unfamiliar with Kyle, but clearly knowing who he is. It's like, you get this experience of like some of these guys start to come out of the woodwork, and then you have the guys, you know, Paul Rabel, who's, you know, Paul Rabel. And so he's not going to have to make as many plays as a guy who just graduated from Marquette and is, you know, just trying to make that team.
Second general question, a little bit more philosophical. And Kyle, I'm interested in you kind of just responding to my opinion. So there are a couple of different approaches that a coaching staff can take to building its roster in this event. One is select the most, you know, the best players, whether it, you know, regardless of how you identify them. And the other is build a team based on filling those roles, how you see them as a staff and the way that you want to play it, and how you feel like you're best served to try to win the tournament. My opinion is that coaches should have the leeway to choose which route they want to take, because ultimately it's their legacy that in many ways is determined or impacted by the results of the tournament. When you have familiarity with a coach or a member of the staff, I think that it's within that coach's justification to be able to say, I trust this guy because I've been in the foxhole with him and I've seen it come to fruition. What is your attitude toward that? You know, understanding that in 2014, Dave Petromala was a member of that staff, and that certainly applies to your relationship with him.
Sure. I mean, I think that's part of it, right? Like you just said it, you can't, if the head coach, you know, you can rewind. I'm not as familiar with the 2002 team, but I think pros weren't a part of that, if I remember correctly, like you guys said. But if you look at the 2006 team, I think we had a handful of Cuse guys. I mean, granted, should they have been on the team? For sure. But there was a handful of Cuse guys. And then I think you look at 2010, there was a good amount of Duke guys. And then you look at 2014 and Hopkins guys or whatever. You know, you can look at throughout the staff and identify guys from the staff school. So look, man, I think it's, like you said, it's up to the coach's discretion. And I feel like there's a bunch of ways to make this work. And I think in going back to when we spoke about 2016, when they just picked the best players and rolled the ball out and said, let's go for it. I think, you know, as Matt said earlier, towards the end of that, like we kind of figured it out in terms of like actual midfield lines and whatever else needed to happen as far as organization. But I think take that team and put it in this scenario where there's going to be training camp for weeks leading up. You're picking the team a year in advance, and you guys are going to play together all fall, and you're going to play together in the spring, and you're going to have a two-week training camp leading up to the games. Like, I think our results could be different, you know, if we had actually had the chance to build the chemistry as that team. So I think, man, it's completely up to the coach's discretion on which route they choose to go in terms of how they form their team. You know, and I've heard a lot of talking about not even having a tryout. Just pick 25 with two alternates and then go from there. And somebody gets hurt, you can add someone in. But forget the tryout process, pick your team and run with it. So I think it's completely up to the coach's discretion. And that's just kind of, I guess, a benefit of being a coach.
Matt, what's unique about international rules, picking players who fit the international game, and how much do you subscribe to the idea that, you know, the Team USA needs to be built in with a mind toward beating Canada?
I mean, it's funny because I've been thinking about and listening to Kyle talk and thinking about going back through 06 and all these things. And I totally agree with Kyle that had that 06 team had the benefit of the training camp and the process that they have now, I think the results definitely would have been different. But I think that you have to have, and I also wanted to add, I completely agree with Kyle. Like, everybody at the tryout understands, you know, it's like when you've been through this process, you understand that the head coach and the assistant coaches are going to get guys that they're familiar with. And so anybody who comes away from that tryout and is complaining about that or is not, you know, thinks that that's unfair, it's like, look at how it's always happened. Like, you could be a beneficiary, you could lose out on it, but this is the way it's going to work. And I think it's totally acceptable, and it makes complete sense to me why it happens. What I think is interesting, when we picked the team in 2010, it was specifically picked to beat Canada. And I think that that is, you know, in looking at this, you know, the World Games, you know, the Iroquois, Australia, like, these teams are getting more and more competitive. I mean, the Iroquois team certainly has so many dynamic offensive players, but this is about beating Canada. And so one of the things that happens in international lacrosse, and it's funny, every time, except for 2010, when I've been a part of this tryout process, there is this narrative within U.S. lacrosse and within the people who are involved that we're going to out-athlete Canada, that we're going to play in transition, that we're going to get up and down the field, that we're going to outrun them because, you know, they maybe don't have the athletes that we do. Number one, they do, and they're starting to get the athletes that we have. But more importantly, anybody who's ever played international lacrosse realizes that there's almost zero transition because it's such a different game. It slows down. Even though the rules are designed to make it fast, you have a ref from Canada, a ref from Japan, a ref from the United States. They can hardly communicate with each other. They're always going to the table to check with things. If you look at the style of lacrosse that Canada plays, every time they shoot, they're inside 10 yards. So they're either scoring or they're missing the cage and backing it up. There aren't a lot with Canada. You don't get a lot of those, like, 15-yard shots, popcorn, goalie makes a save, suddenly your middies are out and running. So I think that to beat Canada, you really have to look at what the international game, how it unfolds. And Canada's been smart in the past because they've recognized that by playing zone in the international game, you're going to slow the pace even more, and you're going to take whatever athletic advantage the United States still has out of the equation. And so, you know, to me, anybody who's going into this process not thinking about beating Canada, you're making an enormous mistake because, you know, that is, if you look at, you know, when's the last time a team besides the U.S. or Canada has played in the gold medal game, right? That's who you're, right. So until that happens, I think our plan should be, let's build a team to beat Canada. And if the coach wants to pick five guys that he coached in college and he's gone to war with, as you said, right, his legacy is on the line. So I think that's the way you have to do it, but it's definitely about beating Canada. And you know, Kyle, you can talk about 14, you know, it's, when we went in 2010, we specifically had Ryan Boyle and Ryan Powell on that team because we knew, Coach Pressler knew that Canada was going to throw a zone at us at some point. They threw a zone at us. Ryan and Ryan came out, picked it apart. They never played zone against us again. And I think that, you know, it's sort of watching the games in 14 and watching that zone, it was like, there was a part of me that was like, oh man, like, you know, we should have been prepared for this. Like, and I felt for the guys on the field because it didn't seem like we were prepared enough to handle that zone the way we had been in 2010.
Right.
And don't let me put words in your mouth, Kyle. It may have been a different experience for you guys in 14, but that's what I felt watching it.
No, you're right, man. I think, you know, as both you guys just said, until something different happens, these teams have to be built to beat Canada. And I think in 2014, we probably thought we did that, right? We probably thought we put the right group together to go out there and beat Canada. But I think at the same time, you know, Matt just spoke to the international game and how different it is. And, you know, it slows down so much. So I don't care how athletic your team is, transition is going to be limited. That's just part of it. You know, Canada does a great job at the face-off X. So, you know, that's transition off of that will obviously be limited. And, you know, I think it, ultimately the talent on that roster is comparable to the talent on our roster, right? Like, I think if fast forward, rewinding back to 2006, one of the things that always got me, and I didn't really realize it until I was so young at that time, that I wasn't as familiar with everybody's backgrounds as I probably needed to be, but just understanding that, like, when we lost to Canada in 2006, and it was, you know, slated as the biggest upset of all time, this, that, and the other, when you look at their roster and look at our roster, I mean, talent-wise and accolade-wise and the success both groups have had in the sport are pretty comparable, right? I mean, you're talking about Gary Gates, Tom Marichek, Brody Merrill, Gavin Prout. You're talking about some of the best players to ever pick up a lacrosse stick, and then obviously with Jeff Snyder at DX, kind of neutralized everything we could do. So, I think just the gap has closed so much between both groups that at the end of the day, for now, and until someone proves differently, these teams have to be built to try and beat Canada.
Two more questions, and then we'll get you out of here. The first is a little bit softer, and it's the idea that, you know, there are going to be about 72 players at this U.S. national team tryout, and that probably means that there are hopefully, you know, a handful of guys who are going for the experience, you know, with the hope that they're going to make it, but maybe not the expectation. And so my question is, obviously we've talked about the intensity and the on-field experience, but what's it like off the field? What's it like in the downtime? What's it like in the dorms? What's it like in the hotels? And what is the social component of it like, you know, particularly if you're a young guy getting to know someone, or if you're a vet getting to know someone that you've never played with? Kyle, I'm interested in your perspective on that first.
Yeah, I loved, like, 2006, honestly, it's when I decided, like, to be a full-time lacrosse guy. Like, I'm going to give this a shot. And it was after spending time with Matt and J.J. Bear and AJ and just picking those guys' brains and being able to sit around, you know, a big guy that really helped me out as far as understanding what it was like to be a pro was Pat McCabe. I remember 2006, I would just sit in the dining hall or sit in the dorm and just watch him and everything he did. It was just so professional and was always looking to help guys out. Such a leader and a mentor. He was great. And so for me, in 2006, that the off-the-field stuff was so important in terms of the growth for myself headed into this professional lacrosse thing full time. So that my time there was incredible. And then I think 2014 was certainly a different experience. We were in dorms. We had one floor of the dorm. We weren't really allowed to leave much. We had a Nintendo Wii in there, if I remember correctly, and there were things going on. But I think for me personally, in 2006, I was a lot more relaxed than I was in 2014. In 2014, it was just an intense environment, and it was great to be around guys. You know, I think me and Paul roomed together, and I think our suite mates were Crotty and Siebel. So we had a good group. We spent a lot of time together, but I think the 2014 experience was certainly an intense one.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle, I don't know about you, but I can't see the movie Wedding Crashers without thinking about A.J. Hogan and Pat McCabe and all 100%. Those guys from that 2016. I think that was one of the things that why 06 stung so much was because it was such an awesome group of guys. Like of all the teams, you know, it's like that. It was so much fun being off the field together and like going through the process of the World Games with that group of guys. And, you know, I was at the time, you know, I'm like 4 or 5 years older than Kyle, but like I still looked up, you know, Casey Powell and Pat McCabe, and like AJ Hogan was like my hero as a midfielder. Like watching that guy play, he was, you know, the smoothest midi I'd ever seen. And so it's like there is that sense of like, oh man, this is so cool. It's such a, you know, we have these guys that I've looked up to. We have this next generation with Kyle coming along. And so it's a bummer in 06 because, you know, you have that bitter taste, which really, that was such an awesome off the field experience. And I think the whole, for me, like the whole tryout experience is always tons of fun from just like when in 2002, you know, they roomed us alphabetically. So Strebel and Springer ended up together, and you probably can't pick two more unlike, you know, people in the lacrosse world. And like, all I would do as soon as we were done playing is I would go back and Springer and I would sit in our room. And by the time, you know, we'd been there for 20 minutes, it was like Boyle had come in, Mikey Powell had come in. And it was just like this group of Princeton and Syracuse guys sitting around and Princeton guys saying, oh yeah, we practiced for 2.5 hours before the national championship game. And the Syracuse guys would look at us like we had 8 heads and say, I've never practiced for 2.5 hours in my entire college career. So you always get, you know, this sense of like, oh man, these are the different experiences that these guys have. So off the field and in the trial process, like if you weren't so, you know, filled with so much anxiety about making the team, it really would be like going to summer camp with the best lacrosse players in the world.
That's awesome. And
it
brings us to what I think is kind of a natural ending point, which is, you know, John Donowski is the coach of this team. He certainly has a reputation that for, I think, you know, a pretty decent balance of the two dichotomies you just laid out, Matt. So Kyle, what's your, you know, familiarity with this staff and Coach Donowski, what's your expectation for, you know, what the 70 some players have in store over the next couple of days?
You know, everything I've heard, and I'm pretty close with Seth Tierney. He was the offensive coordinator at Hopkins when I was there, and he's just been a mentor and a close friend of mine since I left school. So I've kind of heard from him and spoke to him just to get a glimpse on what's going on in the process. And it's going to be awesome, man. I mean, that coaching staff is a really good one. And that's when I saw the staff announced, you know, I had already kind of made up in my mind before that I didn't want to take a run at this thing again. You know, we have our second child on the way, and there's just a lot going on. And then I think I just found out I had to get ankle surgery. So I've already kind of made up my mind that I was going to be out. But then I saw the staff, the capitalization, just like, oh, my gosh, that's a group I'd want to play for. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It'll be laid back, I think, in terms of what the last group was like. But at the same time, he'll get the best out of the players, and they'll have a blast. And I think they'll put together an incredible group.
Streves, what's your expectation for what the next 3 days are going to hold for the guys that are trying out?
I think Kyle said it perfectly. You know, it's my only barometer with Coach Donowski is, you know, interactions at the U.S. Lacrosse Convention, hearing him talking with Coach Tierney when I was coaching at Princeton, and the third aspect of that is every guy I've ever met who's played for Coach Donowski is a guy I consider a friend, whether they went to Hofstra or Duke. And so I think that you know, that bodes well for the quality of this team and the quality individuals. And, you know, I mean, Coach Donowski's track record certainly speaks for itself. So I think it's going to be, if ever there was a coach that seems to have the perfect balance to handle the intensity, but also to bring that sort of levity and that laid back attitude that's going to allow these guys to thrive, I think it would be Coach Donowski. So it's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to see how it shakes out.
Well, fellas, like I said at the top, couldn't ask for two guys more adept and dialed in with the experience, and we really appreciate your time. Best of luck. Well, first of all, to you, Kyle, as you say, becoming a dad for a second time, and best of luck to the 70-some players who are going to be trying out at U.S. Lacrosse headquarters this week. Check out InsideLacrosse.com throughout the week for updates from tryouts, and we will keep apprised of the team selection process as Coach Donowski and his staff windows it down. And as always, fellas, you guys are welcome back on the Inside Lacrosse podcast whenever you want.
Thanks a lot. Anytime.
Appreciate it, Terrence. Catch up soon.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.